this couple of readings so that we know where we are and what we're talking about. First reading is 2 Kings 17, it's on page 439. Let's start in at verse 1. In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hoshea, son of Elah, became king of Israel in Samaria, and he reigned for 9 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, but not like the kings of Israel who preceded him. Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, came up to attack Hoshea, who had been Shalmaneser's vassal and had paid him tribute. But the king of Assyria discovered that Hoshea was a traitor, for he had sent envoys to the king of Egypt, and no longer paid tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done year by year. Therefore Shalmaneser seized him and put him in prison. The king of Assyria invaded the entire land, marched against Samaria, and laid siege to it for 3 years. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and deported the Israelites to Assyria. He settled them in Halah, in Gozan, in the harbour river, and in the towns of the Medes. All this took place because the Israelites had sinned against the Lord their God, who had brought them out of Egypt from under the power of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. They worshipped other gods and followed the practices of the nations the Lord had driven out before them, as well as the practices that the kings of Israel had introduced. Second reading is again 2 Kings, but chapter 25, which is page 450. This is starting at verse 8. On the 7th day of the 5th month, in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, commander of the imperial guard, an official of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He set fire to the temple of the Lord, the royal palace, and all the houses in Jerusalem. Every important building he burnt down. The whole Babylonian army under the command of the imperial guard broke down the walls around Jerusalem. Nebuzaradan, the commander of the guard, carried into exile the people who remained in the city, along with the rest of the populace and those who had gone over to the king of Babylon. But the commander left behind some of the poorest people of the land to work the vineyards and the fields. This ends the lesson, or the reading, and opens the door for Alan. You'll be welcome when you speak to us.
Thank you. Well, thank you for inviting me again today. I suppose you were surprised at those two readings of invasion by foreign armies and the destruction of Jerusalem in the south and Israel in the north, and the people carried off into exile. Much like the world today, there are armies marching, people suffering, and destruction everywhere. I hope we'll understand really that God has got everything under control. And we don't understand it, but we can accept it in faith, knowing that our God is in control, not the evil one, not the mighty emperors, not the people of Babylon. So what am I talking about today? I had in mind actually to talk about the prophets of the Old Testament, going into, especially in the time of the kings. And we will get there eventually, but not today, because I needed to fill in some background. In the past God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways. That's probably a verse you remember from Hebrews, the very first verse, which is an invitation to Jewish Christians of the first century to look back to their own scriptures to discover that God had been with them, always with them, throughout their history. And that invitation applies to us today, who call ourselves Christians. In order to have a more complete understanding of God, we dare not, we must not restrict our Bible study to the New Testament only. It's probably true that our first encounters with God were the works and the words of Jesus come from the New Testament, and they played a vital role in our coming to know our Saviour. And it's probably also true that as we grew in our Christian faith, the writings of the apostles, especially Paul, were key to our understanding more of our Saviour. But we can't just be New Testament Christians. We have to spend time in the Old Testament. But there are places in the Old Testament where the reading is difficult, or where it's uncomfortable, or where it's unpleasant, or where it's shocking, or where it's sordid, or where it's hard to believe. But go there we must, for God has spoken through his written word, not just for people of the time, but for us today. Now, when we consider what we know about the Old Testament, we could say that we know something about the patriarchs and the birth of the nation of Israel, of its time in Egypt, of the Exodus and the giving of the commandments, and of the entry into the promised land and its struggles to lay claim to all of it. And after that, we probably know a little bit about the first kings of Israel, Saul and David, especially David, starting with the story of Ruth. And we perhaps know something about Solomon and his wisdom and the building of the temple in Jerusalem. But after that, we're probably a bit less secure in our understanding of the history of God's people. And those are the people that he chose out of all the peoples in the world to be his own. And as we follow the history of this nation, we see time and time again the parallels between them and the world that we live in today. God had promised them blessings if they remained true to him. But they seemed determined to go their own way, and they followed a path which led to judgment. And we keep coming to these questions. Why didn't they obey God as they had promised to do? Why didn't they listen to the prophets that God sent to them? Did they not believe that God would judge them one day? Well, judgment did come. It came first to the Israelites who lived in the northern kingdom, and we read about that in our first reading. And then judgment came later to those in the south, and that's the reading that we had in 2 Kings 25. The northern kingdom came to an end about 720 BC, and Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians about 520 years later or so, in 586 BC. Where did it all go wrong? If you go back to Deuteronomy chapter 28, you find these words. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commands I give you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. All these blessings will come on you and accompany you if you obey the Lord your God. And then there follows a list of wonderful blessings you can read in Deuteronomy 28. But when we get to verse 15, there is a warning. It says this: if you do not obey, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. The following verses of that chapter make for difficult but sober reading, and I'll just pick out a couple of verses. The Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies. You will build a house, but you will not live in it. Your sons and daughters will be given to another nation. A people that you do not know will eat what your land and your labor produce. The alien who lives among you will rise above you higher and higher, but you will sink lower and lower. The Lord will bring a nation against you from far away. And the chapter goes on to declare that even the most sensitive man or the most sensitive woman will be driven to act in ways that we would consider abhorrent or unthinkable. And until finally we read this, you will be uprooted from the land you are entering. The Lord will scatter you among all nations. You will find no resting place. The Lord will give you an anxious mind, eyes weary with longing, and a despairing heart. Now, when those words of promised blessing and the words of warning of the consequences of disobedience were given, the people were near the end of their 40 years in the wilderness, and they were soon to enter the promised land under the leadership of Joshua. And the Lord through Moses reminded them how he was faithful to them throughout. In Deuteronomy 30 we read this: this day I call heaven and earth as witnesses against you that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that your children may live and that you may love your God. Listen to his voice and hold fast to him. For the Lord is your life, and he will give you many years in the land he swore to give to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It had all started so well for this young nation. Here's what we read in Joshua chapter 21. So the Lord gave Israel all the land he had sworn to their forefathers, and they took possession of it and settled there. The Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their forefathers. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord handed all their enemies over to them, and not one of all the Lord's good promises to the house of Israel failed. Every one was fulfilled. Shortly before Joshua died, he had gathered the people together, and they said in response to those familiar words of Joshua, you remember what he said: if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your forefathers they served before them beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you're living. But as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. And here's what they said: we will serve the Lord our God and obey him. However, it wasn't long before it went wrong. Chapter 1 of the book of Joshua, the book of Judges, give us some clues as to why. Now the tribes had been allocated land, but it was their responsibility to claim it. Did they do so? Well, here's what we read. The Benjamites failed to dislodge the Jebusites who were living in Jerusalem. Manasseh did not drive out the people of several towns, for the Canaanites were determined to live in the land. Canaanites continued to live in the territory allocated to Ephraim. Neither did Zebulun drive out the Canaanites, who remained among them. The tribe of Asher lived among the Canaanite inhabitants of the land. So too did the tribe of Naphtali. And the Amorites confined Dan to the hill country, not allowing them to come down to the plain. So instead of driving out the enemies, the tribes of Israel did not fulfill their mission to take over the land. And chapter 2 of Judges gives us God's reaction. We read this in the first couple of verses. The angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim and said, I brought you out of Egypt and led you into the land that I swore to give to your forefathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall not make a covenant with the people of this land, but you shall break down their altars. Yet you have disobeyed me. Why have you done this? Now therefore I tell you that I will not drive them out before you. They will be thorns in your sides, and their gods will be a snare to you. And then in chapter 3 of Judges we read these verses. The Israelites lived among the Canaanites, Hittites, Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. They took their daughters in marriage and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods. So in the many years which followed, we witness in the Bible a nation which seemed determined to go its own way, or rather, to follow the path of the world around them. They demanded a king, and God graciously allowed them to have one, the first one being Saul. Why did God not reject them outright? Well, in 1 Samuel 12, we have this verse. For the sake of his great name, the Lord will not reject his people, because the Lord was pleased to make you his own. And it was Samuel, the last of the judges, who warned the people, yet if you persist in doing evil, both you and your king will be swept away. And you remember that Saul was their first king. He was 30 years old when he became king, and he reigned for 42 years. If he had followed the ways of the Lord, all would have been well. However, listen to what Samuel said. This is 1 Samuel 13. You have not kept the command the Lord your God gave you. If you had, he would have established your kingdom over Israel for all time. What a blessing that should have been to Saul. But Samuel goes on to say, but now your kingdom will not endure. The Lord has sought out a man after his own heart and appointed him leader of his people, because you have not kept the Lord's command. And the man chosen by God to be king was David, the grandson of Boaz and his wife Ruth, the Moabitess. And through Nathan, the prophet, David learned an important truth about God's plan for him, the plan for his people, and his plan for us. And these verses from 2 Samuel chapter 7 are some of the most important verses in the whole of the Bible. Nathan said this: "The Lord declares to you that the Lord himself will establish a house for you. When your days are over and you rest with your fathers, I will raise up your offspring to succeed you, who will come from your own body, and I will establish his kingdom. He is the one who will build a house for my name, and I will establish the throne of his kingdom forever. I will be his father, and he shall be my son. When he does wrong, I will punish him with the rod of men, with floggings inflicted by men. But my love will never be taken away from him, as I took it away from Saul, whom I removed before you. Your house and your kingdom shall endure forever before me. Your throne shall be established forever." And that's what we call the Davidic covenant. And that was unconditional. There wasn't a condition there, not if you obey me, then this will happen. But it was an unconditional covenant, one that could be explored at great length. It was God's will that, and God's promise, that through a descendant of David, there would be a kingdom that will last forever. Well, David's son Solomon became king after David. And he was the one that built the temple that David had in mind to build. And we all remember Solomon's wisdom and think of him as a good king. But in 1 Kings chapter 11, we read this, that Solomon did evil in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 7 and 8 of 1 Kings 11. On a hill east of Jerusalem, Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the detestable god of Moab, and for Molech, the detestable god of the Ammonites. He did the same thing for all his foreign wives, who burned incense and sacrifices to their gods. And as a consequence, this is what God had said. He said, "I will most certainly tear the kingdom away from you. And from that time, Solomon was faced with enemies both from outside, such as Hadad from Edom and Rezon from Aram, that's Syria, and also from within, in the form of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat. Now Jeroboam was one of Solomon's high officials, and his rebellion was to be significant. It would lead to a divided kingdom. And we come to a prophet called Ahijah in 1 Kings 11, who explains this. He foretold that Jeroboam would become king over part of the land. It's explained in 1 Kings 11. About that time, Jeroboam was going out to Jerusalem, and Ahijah the prophet of Shiloh met him on the way, wearing a new cloak. The two of them were out in the country, and Ahijah took hold of the new cloak he was wearing and tore it into 12 pieces. Then he said to Jeroboam, "Take 10 pieces for yourself, for this is what the Lord God of Israel says. See, I am going to tear the kingdom out of Solomon's hand and give you 10 tribes. But for the sake of my servant David and the city of Jerusalem, which I have chosen out of all the tribes of Israel, he will have one tribe. I will do this because they have forsaken me and worshipped Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Chemosh, the god of the Moabites, and Molech, the god of the Ammonites, and have not walked in obedience to me, nor done what is right in my eyes, nor kept my decrees and laws as David, Solomon's father, did. But I will not take the whole kingdom out of Solomon's hand. I have made him ruler all the days of his life for the sake of David, my servant, whom I chose and who obeyed my commands and decrees. I will take the kingdom from his son's hands and give you 10 tribes. I will give 1 tribe to his son, so that David, my servant, may always have a lamp before me in Jerusalem, the city where I chose to put my name. And that's exactly what happened. Rehoboam, Solomon's son, refused to lessen the burden on the people, so they rebelled and gave their allegiance instead to Jeroboam. Here's how that came about. The people of Israel went to Rehoboam and they said, "Your father put a heavy yoke on us, but now lighten the harsh labor and the heavy yoke he put on us, and we will serve you." Now Rehoboam, he consulted first the elders who had served Solomon, who advised him to look favorably on the people's request. And then he consulted the young man who had grown up with him. And it was their advice that he took. Here's what he said to the people. "My father made your yoke heavy. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with scorpions." So it's no surprise to us that there was a rebellion. And one of the saddest verses in the whole Bible is 1 Kings 12, verse 16. It says this: "When all Israel saw that the king refused to listen to them, they answered the king, 'What share do we have in David? What part in Jesse's son? To your tents, Israel. Look after your own house, David.' So the Israelites went home." Oh, if only they could have known the importance of what they were saying. Instead of acknowledging Rehoboam as king, they turned to Jeroboam and made him king. And only the tribe of Judah remained loyal to the house of David. And so we have 2 kings, Rehoboam in Jerusalem and Jeroboam in Shechem. 2 kingdoms, Judah in the south and Israel in the north. And we're told that there was continual warfare between Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Neither was a good king. Judah did evil in the eyes of the Lord. So we 2 kingdoms, one in the north centered on Samaria, ruled by Jeroboam, and one in the south centered on Jerusalem, ruled by Rehoboam. And in the years after that, we see 2 nations in decline. In the north, until they're captured by the Assyrians and their exile, Israel was ruled by 9 different families. And it was hard to find a good king among them. The Israelites persisted in all the sins of Jeroboam and did not turn away from them until the Lord removed them from his presence, as he had warned them through his servants, the prophets. So the people of Israel were taken from their homeland into exile in Assyria, and they're still there. And in the south, there was 1 ruling family, the family of David. Of the kings in that line, only Hezekiah and Joash did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And as for the people of Judah, we read in 2 Kings 17, "And even Judah did not keep the commands of the Lord their God, they followed the practices Israel had introduced. Zedekiah was the king in Jerusalem when it fell to the Babylonians. And we read in 2 Kings 24, it was because of the Lord's anger that all this happened to Jerusalem and Judah. And in the end, he thrust them from his presence. What hope was there now for these two nations, now exiled to distant parts of the world? There can be no argument that God would have been justified in leaving them and having nothing more to do with them. But he had chosen them, and he still loved them, and he continued in his faithfulness towards them. He had known that they would turn away from him, but he still held out the promise of restoration for them, and that promise was given to them in every age through his representatives, the prophets, both in the northern kingdom and in the south. I have wanted to look at those prophets, but I'll leave that till next time. I needed to set the background of what the prophets were up against and lay it out for you. But I want to go back to Deuteronomy chapter 30 to talk about the, to read a little bit about God's promise of restoration. So it's way back, many, many years previously, that God had held out hope of restoration. This is Deuteronomy chapter 30. And it's right at the beginning of the chapter, the first 10 verses, and I'll finish with this. When all these blessings and curses I have set before you come on you, and you take them to heart, wherever the Lord your God disperses you among the nations, and when you and your children return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and with all your soul according to everything I command you today, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you and gather you again from all the nations where he scattered you. Even if you have been banished to the most distant land under the heavens, from there the Lord your God will gather you and bring you back. He will bring you back to the land that belonged to your ancestors, and you will take possession of it. He will make you more prosperous and numerous than your ancestors. The Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants, so that you may love him with all your heart and with all your soul, and live. The Lord your God will put all these curses on your enemies who hate and persecute you. You will again obey the Lord and follow all of his commands I am giving you today. Then the Lord your God will make you the most prosperous in all the work of your hands, and in the fruit of your womb, the young of your livestock, and the crops of your land. The Lord will again delight in you and make you prosperous, just as he delighted in your ancestors, if you obey the Lord your God and keep his commands and decrees that are written in this book of the law, and turn to the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. So much to explore in all that I've said, but I hope I've given you such an overview of the background to what the prophets are going to have to say.